Right now, though, I'd like to welcome Minister Nathan Gray, the Honourable Nathan Gray, to the Gay to the podium. Guy, to the podium.
It's that guy over there.
Minister of Member of Parliament for Otaki, and appointed Minister of Internal Affairs in the National Government in June 2009. He's also Associate Minister of Justice, Associate Minister of Transport, and Minister responsible for the National Library and Archives New Zealand. We're very grateful to have Nathan here. He is standing in for Honourable Stephen Joyce, who's been called over to Australia at reasonably short notice to deal with some issues that, of course, have been in the news media this morning. Mr. Guy entered Parliament as a List MP in 2005, was elected National's Junior Whip in 2006. A highlight of his first parliamentary term was to attend the Young Leaders Summit in Seoul, South Korea. He was promoted to Senior Whip in early 2008 and retained his position following the 2008 general election when he won the Otaki seat incorporating Kapiti and Horowhenua districts. Prior to entering Parliament, Mr. Guy was active in farming and local government. He served for 8 years on the Horowhenua District Council and managed the family dairy farm at the same time, I suspect quite a challenging task. In 2000, he was awarded a Winston Churchill Fellowship to study beef exports to the United States. So he's had a wide range of experience, and we very much welcome Honourable Nathan Guy to the podium. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks very much for those warm introductory remarks, Murray. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, what a lovely day it is in Wellington.
Yeah, why the hell are we inside this building?
That's right, we should be out there. We should be outside. Welcome. Can I first of all apologise on behalf of the Honourable Stephen Joyce, who is in Australia with the Prime Minister, talking about some very strategic relationships with our Australian counterparts. Of course, I'm waiting to catch up with Stephen next week to see if he's wearing an Australian rugby tie. Hopefully, the Prime Minister can wear the All Blacks tie, and we're hoping for a fantastic result tomorrow. Can I please today give you a perspective in the government's view on IPv6, and it's a very important issue. Thank you, Murray, for the opportunity to be here representing the New Zealand government on behalf of the Minister, the Honourable Stephen Joyce. Can I congratulate you and the sponsors for organising what I believe is a very important series of events and meetings that you've had in Christchurch this week and Auckland yesterday. I want to recognise the contributions of Internet New Zealand for their hosting of the steering group, and congratulate and thank the gold sponsors, very important, Telecom NZ Mobility and FX Networks, and all the other sponsors for their very generous support. I have particular pleasure in acknowledging the presence of Dr. Vint Cerf. We were last night at the Internet Industry Awards, which were hugely successful, and Vince gave a very good address there to that group. And as I told the audience last night, when I asked some of my colleagues about Vince, they said, "Oh, legend, guru, he is an amazing character." So it is it's very special that we have you in our presence today, and thank you very much for your address that you've just given. Vint, of course, was one of the two original authors of the seminal May 1974 paper that began the evolution of the Internet Protocol. It's very appropriate that you are here to make your contributions to this hui, and I want to thank you very much on behalf of New Zealand and indeed the government for your valuable support that you are giving the steering group. I do not need to emphasise the critical importance of the Internet to this country and especially to this audience. A large chunk of our national productivity growth is indeed in your hands. The internet protocol has proven to be remarkably enduring and adaptive to the massive changes that have taken place since its introduction. Since the IPv4 was first adopted in 1983, the number of internet hosts has expanded by a factor of over 1 million. But with serious planning taking place to extend the number of internet users from the present 1.5 billion to encompass the whole population of the planet, and the billions of intelligent machines that they will use, the limitation of the 4 billion possible addresses in the IPv4 address space becomes very obvious. It is salutary to reflect that IPv6 has been around for nearly half the lifetime of IPv4. Unlike the internet itself, however, its adoption has been very slow. In part, this has been because of the ingenuity of the technical community in extending the utilisation of IPv4 address space by various means. But a reason is the very success of the internet itself. By making changes to the key infrastructure of such a critically important infrastructure is not to be contemplated lightly. Changing a fundamental communications protocol on the internet can be compared to changing the tire of a Formula One car in the middle of a Grand Prix while in the centre of a track. The rationale for these HUI is to convince you as key business decision makers that there is a business case to be made for IPv6 adoption. Of course, such a change will inevitably entail costs and risks. The goal, of course, is to minimise the costs and risks while maximising the many benefits. The business case arises in part from the risks that your business will be exposed to, arising from the shortage of IPv4 address space. But this is really only the beginning of the story. Many of the workaround strategies that has been devised to overcome the growing shortage of addresses, but in themselves impose limitations on the fundamental simplicity and consequently operation of the internet. These limits interfere with the flexibility and capacity of the internet to adapt to new users and innovations. In short, these fixes themselves create problems which are all the more damaging because they are not immediately apparent. Typically, they only become obvious in hindsight. We need to have IPv6 widely adopted if we are able to take full advantage of the mobile internet and of the Internet of Things, involving such things as intelligent houses and intelligent transport systems. A key driver of IPv6 to make possible new services and business opportunities on a large scale, such as networked sensors for industrial or home automation services. There is a strong emphasis on IPv6 adoption in many of our important trading partners. Japan, Korea, and China are good examples. The internet provides a trade route of growing importance to New Zealand exporters. We have to remain competitive in all aspects of our use of the opportunities that the internet affords us. We must not be complacent in expecting these market opportunities to remain as accessible as they are today, without keeping up with the technological change. I can tell you that the Minister does not believe that regulatory intervention is appropriate. Adoption of IPv6 needs to be led by the private sector. The private sector must recognise that adopting IPv6 is in their own best interest to provide their investment in online capabilities into the future. Issues of advantages and disadvantages, costs, risks, timing, methods have to be for each enterprise to assess for itself. There is no single best answer for all. Where the government can assist is raising awareness. The Ministry of Economic Development is providing funding to assist the work of the IPv6 steering group. The other main area for the government is providing leadership by getting its own house in order. The Karen network has been IPv6 capable from its inception. The government spends around $2 billion on ICT each year, about 40% of the total New Zealand expenditure on ICT. We are looking to use ultra-fast broadband to increase the efficiency and effectiveness of the economy as a whole, and particularly from a government perspective, in the key areas of health and education. We are initiating a syndicated procurement program where government agencies with expertise in particular areas will coordinate purchasing strategies across government. All of these initiatives offer opportunity for the government to take a leading role by future-proofing with the adoption of IPv6 throughout the state sector. A recent example of this is the one.govt suite of services, which is replacing the government's shared network. The one.govt internet services are IPv6 ready today, and the standard wide area network offering is also IPv6 capable. We view this as a potential vehicle to provide a default IPv6 gateway for state sector organisations. The gateway will be complemented with a standard-based network interface to allow interaction with other standard-based implementations. This will enable increased collaboration both within and across government entities, which should help to deliver improved services to the public. The Department of Internal Affairs, for which I am fortunate to be the Minister, is currently exploring opportunities to implement IPv6 within its own network in order to build capability and develop a model for the wider public sector. I am confident that these measures being undertaken by the government will provide the confidence boost that the New Zealand internet industry itself needs to invest in IPv6. IPv6 associated with the government purchasing and ICT programs, the broadband investment, and the opportunities enabled by developments in health and education that I've outlined will ensure that ISPs and carriers have a strong incentive to provide IPv6 connectivity. This capability will, of course, be available to the whole country. So it is very important that this not be seen as an end in itself, but rather as the launch of an ongoing strategy to move us forward as a nation towards full IPv6 adoption over time. Our main internet access providers need to be able to provide essential connectivity both for IPv6 users and for those who need to be able to link to them. In this connection, I congratulate Internet New Zealand for ensuring that the .nz registry is fully IPv6 enabled, and also that some of our key sponsors for this event are fully IPv6 capable. Well done. Our universities and polytechs must ensure that ICT professionals are fully equipped to deal with an IPv6 environment. I understand that you will be receiving an outline of this capability later today. We need to monitor the uptake of IPv6 both in New Zealand and around the world to ensure that we keep pace with other countries which are moving forward to take advantage of the opportunities. Fortunately, this is an area where it is not necessary for New Zealand to be pioneers. There is extensive documentary material to draw on around the world. I note that Tony Hill and Kevin Karp from IVP6 Now are here to contribute their knowledge of the Australian experience to the program, and I thank them for their willingness to share their experience with us today and let us know all of the tricks that the Australian rugby team will be up to tomorrow. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the government, I will conclude by thanking you, Murray, very much, and the members of the steering group who are working hard to ensure that we have a secure and effective future for the internet in New Zealand. Thank you.